Na kama yenyam tavatata sevanat akinchana partyata madvaram vipo arajya kastvam hyapavargatam hare prinita aryo varamatma bandhanam.
O all-powerful one, I desire no boon other than service to your lotus feet. The boon most eagerly sought by those free of material desire. O Hari, one enlightened person who worships you, the giver of liberation, would choose a boon that causes his own bondage. Generally, we find in the name of religion, people all over the world are worshiping either the Supreme Lord or a particular demigod, a deputed agent of the Lord, for the purpose of fulfilling their material needs. In fact, most scriptures, this is the subject matter discussed: artha, kama, dhamma, and moksha. Artha means to perform religious principles, to pray to God, to perform rituals or sacrifice for a better economic situation in this world. Why do we want a better economic situation in this world? For kama, for a higher degree of sense gratification. After all, if we have a healthy body, we can enjoy better sense gratification. If we have more wealth, success in business and so forth, we can enjoy much better sense enjoyment. And also, dhamma, which means piety. People practice religion in order to become more pious, more charitable. But what is their aim? Again, better sense gratification. What will I achieve through these charitable acts? What will I achieve? How I can avoid suffering and get better facilities for enjoyment if I perform good deeds and avoid committing sinful activities? But eventually, even despite all sorts of sense gratification, all sorts of reaping of pious deeds, ultimately, we are frustrated. Krishna says in Gita, Mamu Petya Punara Janma Dukalayam Ashashvatam Napnavanti Mahatmana Sam Siddhim Paramam Gata, that all good or bad results in this world are temporary. Abhramabhuvanaloka punaravartanorjana mamupetya tukontaya punarajanmana vidyate. Whether you attain the highest planets due to pious acts or whether you go down to the lowest suffering conditions due to sinful acts, it is all temporary. Nothing lasts for very long in this material existence. Therefore, such a soul, being frustrated with material life altogether, approaches religion for the purpose of salvation or liberation, moksha. We are reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has declared that the Bhagavatam is the Amalam Puranam. It is the spotless Purana. It is the purest and highest of all Vedic literatures. It is the final word of Srila Vyasadeva. And Veda Vyasa explains in the second verse dharma prajita kaitavatra paramaniramatsaranam satam. That this Bhagavatam is unique. It is the only literature amongst the Vedas, Vyasadeva explains, which kicks out, completely omits artha, kama, dhamma, and moksha. It deals only with the ultimate perfection of life, unalloyed loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this particular story from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find Lord Sri Krishna. He had some years before left Vrindavan to reside in Mathura. After killing the terrible demon Kamsa and liberating his beloved mother and father, Devaki Vasudev, installing Maharaj Ugrasena again as king, he lived happily with the members of the Yadu dynasty. But Kamsa had two queens, and they were the daughters of a great friend of Kamsa, who was also a terrible demon of the name Jarasandha. And the two daughters of Jarasandha, how they wept and cried at the death of their husband Kamsa. Because after all, even though he was a great demon, he was providing them incredible amounts of sense gratification. So therefore they were very attached to him. And it is said love is blind. When you become attached to someone, not in real love, but in material love, which is really kama, then you cannot see things as they are. What is day appears to be night, and what is night appears to be day by a person who is blinded by material attachments. So these wives actually felt that Krishna was a demon and that Kamsa was a very pious person. So they went to Jarasandha, their father, and they said, Kamsa was such a nice man. He was our husband. He was loving. He was generous. He was charitable. But this Krishna, what kind of person was he? He was invited to a wonderful wrestling match, which was perfectly fair for the entertainment of everyone. He was a special honored guest by our husband, Kamsa. And what did Krishna do? He didn't just defeat the wrestlers. He killed them all. And then, without Kamsa's awareness, this cheater, he jumped up into the dais and he killed our husband. And he has left us weeping as widows. Jarasandha, upon hearing these words from daughters, he made a vow that he would not only destroy Krishna, but he would destroy all of his family members. So he took his armies, massive armies, and he marched into Mathura. And every time he came, Krishna completely defeated all of his soldiers and completely defeated him. But Krishna would not kill him. Krishna has his reasons. Ultimately, Jarasandha came 17 continuous times to kill Krishna. And every time, all of his armies were defeated. But still, he was under the illusion that one of these times he would be victorious. So he attacked an 18th time. But just before this attack, another great demoniac person, who was really, he was a barbarian, he was crazy person, very, very powerful. He also attacked Mathura. His name was, Kalyavana. Kalyavana His birth is interesting. There was a personality named Gargya who was insulted by the Yadu dynasty. So he did great tapasya to Lord Mahadev Shiva in order to beget a son that would attack the Yadu dynasty with formidable forces. It would not be defeated by the Yadu dynasty or even Krishna. So from this, from a Yavana family, was born Kaliyavana. And he just loved fighting. He loved just showing his might and his strength and his ego to others. And nobody could stand before him. Narada Muni told him that the only person worthy of fighting with you is Krishna. He lives, you should attack him. So Kaliyavana came with millions of soldiers along with him. Terrible, terrible fighters. And they came to attack Mathura. At that time, Lord Sri Krishna was thinking, and he was speaking to Balaramji, that Kaliyavana is coming with so many soldiers on one side, and if we go to fight him, then Jarasandha, he's on his way with his soldiers from the other time. And Jarasandha may cause harm while we're away by kidnapping the residents of Mathura. So very quickly, they called for Vishwakarma. Along with his help, they built a beautiful city in the middle of the sea. No one should walk during class. Sit nicely. And at that time, they built the city of Dwarka in the ocean. And he shifted all the residents of Mathura to Dwarka, and then Krishna went out. He left the city, and Kaliyavana was waiting for him. And he saw that Krishna was coming with no weapons, so he put down all his weapons. He wanted a fair fight, so he attacked Krishna with his own hands. And to our amazement, Krishna ran away. And Kaliyavana was, what is this nonsense? You are Vasudev, Krishna. You are the descendant of the Yadu dynasty. You are supposed to be great heroes. You stand, you fight me. You know that you cannot defeat me. Why you are so afraid for your life? Why you are such a coward? You come back, you fight. But Krishna just kept going. He didn't actually run. He was just walking briskly. And Kaliyavana started chasing after him as fast as he could. And as he was chasing, running with all of his might, Krishna continued just walking. And by the Lord's tremendous mystic powers, Kaliyavana was always just behind Krishna, ready to grab him, but he couldn't quite reach him. And he was running faster and faster. And Krishna was just walking the same speed. But still, couldn't reach him. Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki.
Jai!
Krishna does not have to exert himself. He is the supreme proprietor of all opulences. Meanwhile, Kaliyavana was just insulting him. You come back, you fight, you coward. Krishna just kept going. And then Kaliyavana saw Krishna enter into a dark cave. And he went into the cave. And there he saw, laying in the cave, was somebody sleeping on the ground. He was thought, what nonsense this Krishna is? He's supposed to be a Kshatriya warrior fighting with me. And not only has he run from battle, but now he's pretending to be some detached saintly person going to sleep. So with great anger, he took his foot and with all of his might, he kicked that sleeping personality. But it was not Krishna. It was a great king of the name Muchakunda. And Muchakunda awoke from his sleep. And he looked this direction, that direction, and then he saw standing above him Kalyavana. And he glanced at him with such anger that instantly Kalyavana was burnt into ashes. His anger was pacified after killing him. Then he looked around again and he saw the beautiful form of Sri Krishna. He was just filled with ecstatic love upon seeing the beauty of the Lord. He had a beautiful bluish complexion. He appeared before him with four arms, Chaturbhuja. He had beautiful golden dhoti. The Vaidurya stone and Vajayanti mala. And his beauty was just filling the whole cave atmosphere with an effulgence. And Muchakunda, he first, as is the proper manners, when you see a superior person, before asking who they are, first you identify who you are. So he said, "My name is Muchakunda, and I am a fallen Kshatriya, born of a Kshatriya family." Now, the previous acharyas explain this is very significant, because generally we find, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, people like to boast their qualities of their high birth. If someone is born in a Brahmin family, they expect everyone to accept them as a great Brahmin. If someone is born in a kingly or Kshatriya family, they expect the respect of a Kshatriya. But an actual cultured person, even if he's born in a very, very high family, he will identify himself as a very fallen descendant of that great family. Why? Because he doesn't want anyone to relate to them on the basis of their birth, but on the basis of their quality. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Chaturvana mayasristam guna karma vibhagasha. Which means these four varnas and four ashrams have really not necessarily to do with birth. Taking birth in such a family is a good facility to be properly trained, but you are categorized according to your qualities. And great devotees of the Lord, they never consider themselves to have good qualities. They always identify themselves as fallen souls. So, Muchakunda explained that I was a great king, very powerful king. And I was also, he was also a devotee of Lord Krishna. And he was praying to Krishna to kindly be merciful to him and deliver him from the cycle of birth and death and engage him in his loving service. But because you had such great strength, at one time, the demons, they were conquering the demigods. So the demigods approached Muchakunda and asked him, "Can you defend us and fight on our behalf?" So Muchakunda said, "Yes, I am your servant. I am the servant of the servant of the servant. You are all Krishna's servants. I must serve you." He fought so valiantly that he defeated all the demoniac forces. And the battle lasted for so long, and his services were so much desired, that he went years upon years upon years. he gave up his own sleep just to do the seva for the devatas. And after finally he conquered the asuras, and then Kartikeya was born of Lord Shiva, they had their own protector. So they told Muchukunda, now we do not require your services anymore, but we will award you any benediction you like. This is all the devatas, all the demigods together. They said, we will all bestow upon you any benedictions you like, but we cannot give you liberation. Only Vishnu can give you liberation. No demigod can give liberation. This is their own admittance. People ask, what is the difference between worshipping the Supreme Lord Hari and worshipping the various devatas? This is the difference. The demigods, they are given the power by Krishna to award any type of material benefits to their devotees. And therefore, materialistic people, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, that people who are less intelligent, who are too much attached to material sense gratification, they worship the demigods, but they do not know that whatever material benefits they gain are temporary, and ultimately they will cause frustration, misery, because they'll be lost. And Krishna says in Gita that you should know that whatever material gifts the demigods are giving, they are receiving them from me. But here we find the demigods who were supremely pleased with Kali, with Muchukunda Maharaj. They said, we'll give you everything within our power, but we cannot give you liberation. Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead can give liberation. This is the distinction. Therefore, Vaishnavas do not worship demigods for material benedictions. It is described here by Muchukunda that if you choose a boon of a material benediction, that very boon becomes the cause of your bondage. But every devotee will offer all respect to all the demigods because he knows that these great personalities who are exalted devotees, they can help us in our service to the Supreme Lord Narayan or Krishna. Therefore, we find sometimes devotees, they worship Lord Ganapati, not give me success in my business, but please, your glory is that you remove obstacles from people's paths. Remove obstacles from my path of service to Lord Hari. The gopis, they worshipped Katyayani, the goddess Durga, not for material benedictions, but they wanted to serve Krishna as his wives. So they prayed, please grant that Krishna become our husband so that we can serve him in such an intimate, loving way. And Lord Shankar, Mahadev, who is the greatest of all the devatas, who is a planar expansion of Vishnu himself in the role of a demigod, we find all great Vaishnavas offer all respect and worship to Lord Shiva, but not for material benedictions like Ravana or like Kamsa. They were also Shiva bhaktas. But they worship Lord Shiva for devotion to the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari. In Mathura today, there is a murti called Bhuteshwar Mahadev. and also a murti of the name Pipaleshwara Mahadev. And it is described that Kamsa, he was a devotee of Shiva, and he was worshipping that Shiva Linga with tremendous amount of intensity. But what was he begging Lord Shiva? Give me the power to kill Krishna. Ah, he wanted to kill Krishna. And during that wrestling match, when Krishna and Balaram were in Mathura, the Brijvasis, they were worshipping Lord Shiva also. And they were worshipping Lord Shiva, please protect Krishna. Huh? So this is Lord Shiva's position. He has all kinds of people approaching him for all different varieties of benedictions. But the devotees, they worship for the proper purpose. Even Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was touring South India, he went to so many Shiva temples and Shiva Kanchi and other places, simply worshipping such an exalted divine being, the greatest of all Vaishnavas. Please grant me love of God. Please grant me service to Krishna. Let me be the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna. But it is described here by all the demigods themselves that they can award any material facility, but they cannot give what Vishnu can give: complete liberation from all bondage and love of God. So therefore, Mutrakunda decided to take advantage of the facility being offered to him, because he was fighting for so many long years without sleep. And you know what it's like when you're very tired. You just want to go to sleep. You forget about everything else. You just want to sleep. So he just said, demigods, you're asking me for some material benediction. Well, how can I enjoy anything when I'm so tired? Huh? It's a fact, when you're tired, no matter what, you can't enjoy anything except sleep. So he said, please award me the benediction that I could sleep incessantly for years and years and years, and nobody disturb me. And if anyone dares to try to disturb me, that I will burn them to ashes by my glance. So the devatas awarded this benediction. And it is described, why did he ask this benediction, that if anybody tries to wake me, I will burn them to ashes by my glance? The reason is because he knew that if anything goes wrong, the demigods are going to wake him up and ask him to fight again. So in this way, if everybody knew this, nobody would dare to wake him up again. In this way, he would be left to sleep nicely. So they said, yes, so be it. And then he went into this cave and he took rest. Ah, now Krishna knew that Mutrakunda was his great devotee. And Krishna wanted to award him the highest perfection of life, because of his good devotion. But at the same time, Krishna will never interfere with the benedictions of his devotees. The demigods are all his devotees. So if Krishna were to wake him up, then he would be burned to ashes. And if he wasn't burned to ashes, then he would make the demigods into liars. So how to wake him up? Krishna is very expert. At the same time, Kaliyavana was given the benediction that he could not be defeated by any of the Yadus, which included Krishna. So Krishna did not want to interfere with that benediction either. So therefore, he expertly arranged by bringing everything together. He had Kaliyavana go into the cave, kick Muchukunda. One thing was solved. Kaliyavana was killed. Another thing was this. Kaliyavana was considered a barbarian, a yavana. And to touch such a person, you become very contaminated. So therefore, Muchukunda was able to do it without even touching him, just by looking at him. So one problem was solved. Kaliyavana, who was impossible to be killed by any ordinary way, he was killed with nobody being contaminated, simply by glance. And at the same time, the second purpose was fulfilled, is that Muchukunda woke up. Haribo. So Muchukunda explained these things to Sri Krishna. And then he asked, "Who are you?" And Krishna identified himself, that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am the cause of all causes. I am the source of everything. I am Vasudev, Krishna. I was born of Vasudev and Devaki in Mathura. I lived for so many years in Vrindavan. And now we have just shifted to Dwarka, and with your help, we have killed this demon, Kaliyavana. And Muchukunda, upon hearing that he was his beloved Lord, he surrendered his life. And then Krishna offered him any benediction. And Muchukunda is here praying. Such a beautiful prayer. He's, before asking for any benediction, he's reflecting about his own life and his own realizations over the years. He's explaining that Muchukunda, after bowing his head at the feet of Lord Krishna, he spoke that, "My Lord, the people of this world, both men and women, they are all bewildered by your illusory energy, unaware of the real benefits of life, which is self-realization. They do not worship you, but instead they seek happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are in actuality the source of misery. Such a person becomes so impure in mind despite having this rare human form of life. He does not worship your lotus feet, but like an animal he falls into a blind well. Such a person falls in the darkness of his material home." Muchukunda continues that, "I have wasted all this time becoming more and more intoxicated by my domain and opulence as an earthly king, misidentifying this mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, treasury, and land. I suffered endless anxiety. With deep arrogance and pride, I took myself to be the body, which is a material object, like a pot or a wall. Thinking myself a god amongst men, I traveled the earth surrounded by my charioteers, elephants, cavalry, foot soldiers, generals, disregarding you in my deluding pride. A man obsessed with thoughts of what he thinks needs to be done, intensely greedy and delighting in sense enjoyment, is suddenly confronted by you, who are ever alert, like a hungry snake licking its fangs before a mouse. You appear before everyone as cruel death. The body that first rides very high on decorated elephants or chariots, adorned with gold, and named as a king, in due course of time, is eaten by worms, or burned to ashes, or transformed into stool. He is explaining that whatever our position, whether we're very wealthy, glorious, educated kings, or whether we're simple, uneducated peasants, we are so proud of our material condition of life, but after a few short years, what is the destination of this body? Depending on the culture we're raised in, some people, they bury their bodies when they're dead. Sometimes they spend lakhs and lakhs of rupees on a beautiful casket. We have seen in the Western countries, people spend tens and thousands of US dollars, sometimes even hundreds and thousands, to make a nice casket. You know what casket is? It is a coffin. It is a box to put the dead body. They make it with all kinds of precious jewels and gold and silver, and they decorate the body with the most expensive tuxedo suits, or wonderful wardrobes. And then they put it in the ground, 6 feet underground. And what happens? Little by little, the insects creep in and they eat your flesh away. Huh? And what happens? Your body just turns into dust, eaten by worms. Recently, I was in Egypt. You have seen the pyramids? This particular culture, their idea, they were so much on the bodily concept of life that after you die, wherever your body is, you'll get to enjoy that situation. So kings and princes, they would take the majority of the money of the taxpayers to build a tomb for themselves. They were called pyramids. Because pyramids, there is a very special potency on pyramids that they preserve whatever's in it. Even in the American culture today, this is something that is very much revolutionarily sought after, this idea of pyramids. That if you put vegetables under a pyramid shape, they maintain their duration incredibly longer than anywhere else. There's a certain geometrical design about a pyramid that preserves whatever's in it. People are even building pyramid-shaped houses, thinking they will live longer because they're sleeping in a pyramid. And usually they do, but how much longer? So these people, they made these pyramids thinking that it will preserve my body. Big pyramids, huge, the seven wonders of the world. Of the seven wonders of the world, one of them are the pyramids in Cairo. And what are these pyramids? They're tombs. In fact, another one of the seven wonders of the world is the Taj Mahal. Most of the seven wonders of the world are tombs. In fact, this is consistent with what Yudhisthira said. They asked him, what is the greatest wonder of the world? He said that everybody's about to die and nobody thinks they're going to die. So this is the wonder of the world, is that people are so attached to dead bodies. The body's dead already. When the soul leaves it, you recognize it as being dead. When the soul's in it, it moves because of the soul. The soul is the source of life. The body's dead. But material life means worshiping the dead body. When the soul is in this dead body, it spends its whole life trying to enjoy, trying to give pleasure to the body, decorating the body. The body's dead. The soul, which is a source of life, what are we doing for it? Nothing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that material existence simply means worshiping dead bodies. So what they would do, at least they were honest about it, they would spend the mass amount of their fortune to just put every facility in their tomb. The greatest fortunes of the world have been found in those pyramids. Billions of dollars worth of gold and jewels and diamonds and chairs and beautiful dining sets and all kinds of toys and everything else. Everything is there. Thinking that after I die, I will have all these facilities and I'll enjoy them eternally. And then they put a curse over each doorway to these pyramids, that anyone who enters into this place, he will die and all of his family members will die and everything like that. So no one would dare. That means do not, a very intense way of saying do not disturb. So this is the extent that people are attached to these bodies. And they wrap the body up to make them mummies to try to preserve them as long as possible. So much attached to the body. But ultimately the body, every one of the pyramids has been plundered. Everything has been taken away from them. And besides that, they were gone thousands of years ago. This is the illusion of material life. But ultimately, whoever we are, Muchukunda is saying, whether you're the greatest, most powerful king worshipped and celebrated by all the world, eventually, like everyone else, you're either going to become dust if you're buried, you're going to become ashes if you're burnt, or some people, they feed their dead to the jackals or the dogs or the birds, and they become the stool of that animal. Having conquered the entire circle of directions, and being thus free of conflict, a man sits on a splendid throne, receiving praise from leaders who were once his equals. But when he enters the woman's chambers for sex pleasure, he is led about like a pet animal, my dear Lord. A king who desires even greater power than he already has strictly performs his duties carefully, practicing austerity and foregoing sense enjoyment. But he whose urges are so rampant, thinking I am independent and supreme, cannot attain happiness. He is explaining here, even when a person controls his senses, does not give in to the urges of the mind and the senses, he becomes proud, he becomes puffed up, he thinks, I am independent, I am liberated, I have conquered my senses. Muchukunda says, even such a person can find no real happiness. When the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, O Achyuta, he may attain the association of your devotees. And when he associates with your devotees, there awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees, and the Lord of all causes and their effects. He's explaining here that this material world is so implicated, so complicated, so confusing, and so endlessly entangling. That whoever we are, we cannot escape unless we have the association of devotees. It is only through the association of devotees, satsang of the Vaishnavas, that the real understanding of the goal of life and love of God can awaken within our heart. Muchakunda explains there's no other way. Therefore, the greatest, the most supreme fortune in all the world is the association of the Lord's devotees. But of course, here in Bombay, the association of devotees is there, but we don't have time. We're too busy building our illusory empires, which are like castles in the sand. Therefore, O Lord, having put aside all objects of material desire, which are bound to the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness, I am approaching you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are not covered by mundane designations. Rather, you are the supreme absolute truth, full in pure knowledge and transcendental to the material modes. For so long, I have been pained by troubles in this world and have been burning with lamentation. My six enemies, that means the mind and the five senses, are never satiated, and I can find no peace. Therefore, O giver of shelter, O supreme soul, please protect me. O Lord, in the midst of danger, I have by good fortune approached your lotus feet, which are the truth, and which thus can make one fearless and free of sorrow. Muchakunda Maharaj is here appreciating the good fortune of the dangers he has been put in. Because in the face of great danger and sorrow, lamentation and pain, he has been impelled to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, he's considering these difficulties to be good fortune, because they have drawn him closer and nearer. Because when one takes shelter of the Supreme Lord, just as Queen Kunti has prayed, when one takes shelter of the Lord, even after undergoing great catastrophes and calamities in life, one no longer has to see sorrow or death again. After speaking these wonderful words of love and devotion, Muchakunda asked, Krishna spoke to him. He said that I tested you by asking you to accept a benediction. But you only asked for one thing, and that is shelter at my lotus feet. You asked for nothing material, although I could have given you everything. He said, I tested you. I enticed you with offering such benedictions. But your mind is not overcome by material desires. Krishna said, the minds of non-devotees who engage in such practices, even of pranayama, even of jnana yoga, they are not fully cleansed of material desires. Thus, O King, material desires are again seen to arise in their minds. But because King Muchakunda was a bhakta, he was a devotee, a humble devotee, who wanted no glory, no credit for himself, but simply wanted service to the Lord. The Lord elevated him to the highest, most perfect position of apavarga, or pure liberation in divine love. And then Krishna gave him this benediction. Wander this earth at your own will, with your mind fixed on me. May you always possess such unfailing devotion for me. Manmanabhavamadbhakto Madhyajimnam namaskuru Mam evaishashi satyam te pratijani priyoshime. Krishna has given this benediction to everyone. always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. But how many of us are willing to accept this benediction? And the Lord himself has come to even further enlighten us with a greater benediction. Cheto darpana marajanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam sreya karava chandra kavataranam vidyavadhu jivanam anandam budivaradanam pratipadam punam ratashvaranam sarvatma snaparam param vijayate sri krishna sankirtanam. The benediction that the Lord gave Mochakunda Maharaj was that you always think of me. That wherever you go, whatever you do, you always remember me with unfailing devotion. How to do this? Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us that this benediction is manifesting itself within this world through the divine process of Harinam Sankirtan. By the chanting of the holy name, which is the supreme benediction for all humanity, we can always keep our mind fixed in Krishna. And by always keeping our mind fixed in Krishna, the ultimate benediction of life is fulfilled. Unfailing devotion awakens in our heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajya Kabunoi Sravanadi Sudhi Cheti Koriyayodoy. Mahaprabhu gave this benediction that by simply associating with sincere devotees of the Lord and in their company always chanting his holy names, pure love of God, which is dormant in our heart, is awakened. That pure love is the supreme attainment of the highest liberation. Purushartha Siromani. It is the crest jewel of all benedictions, of all goals of life, pure love of God. By always remembering Krishna through chanting his name, we can all accept and receive this blessing. But it is very important to know that in chanting the name, we must remember Krishna. This means it cannot be done mechanically. If we are just chanting like a tape recorder, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, but our mind is not hearing, that although our tongue is speaking the name, we are not remembering. Krishna is none different than his name. When we hear the name, we are remembering Krishna. Therefore, when chanting, we must concentrate. We must be attentive. We must be alert to hear the beautiful sound of the name of God. In this way, we can always remember Krishna and attain the perfection of life. That perfection which is beyond birth, beyond death. That perfection which awards the ultimate transcendental joy to the soul. Thank you very much.